If it's time to refinance, talk to BOQ. Visit boq.com.au/better.
What a treat. Every week at this time, we catch up with Rich Uncle Mal, the PM, the most powerful man in the nation. Good morning, Rich Uncle Mal.
Good morning to you, Ed, and hello to you, Maho and Robin.
Hello,
always
sir.
A pleasure to speak to you at Triple M Brisbane. You
first question rock. Today. Australia is facing electricity outages, and you've come up with some interesting ways to conserve power over the summer.
Yes, we need to face the grim reality, Ed, that we are using too much power, and so we're offering incentives for people to switch off, which include movie tickets, massages, non-sporting, go in my kayak, a jog with Julie Bishop, and a beauty workshop with Michaela Cash, where she shows you how to tighten your own face.
Wowzers.
Now, hold on. This is all a smokescreen. Why are we running short of electricity?
Yeah. Smokescreen. Now, Marto. So young, so cynical. Well, when the warmer weather kicks in, all of the constituents in the eastern suburbs, Watsons, Potts, Vaucluse, up the Piper where I live, they fire up their pool filters, their creepy crawlies, their barracudas, zodiacs and gators. And it's enough power to light up the central coast.
Yeah, right.
So, the flames really do make the pool look unsightly. So it'd be nice if the poor switched off and headed to the shopping centre. They like the mall. Yeah, so get up there, have a chocolate milk and a durry or what have you, and let us clean the pool.
What have you?
What have you?
Now, sir, you've had some run-ins with Lisa Wilkinson from the Today Show. Have you heard she's leaving that show and going to go to Channel 10, the project?
Finally, some show business news I can sink my teeth into. Yes, Lisa has constantly cut me off in the past in interviews, but I do admire her. But isn't it interesting that she's leaving Nine because of a pay dispute and going somewhere where she won't get paid?
Yes, it is.
I mean, what's she going to do at 10? Join the crew at Ramsey Street and become Dr. Carl's new love interest? become a new judge on MasterChef and blow out like the rest of them? Or replace Arthur on Studio 10? Anyway, good on her. But why does her husband insist on that hideous bandana?
Yeah, we don't.
He really is a bit of a verbose fool, isn't he?
Betcha.
He's a bit of a tool.
Yes.
He's a bit of a tool, Fitzy.
Tell us what you really think. So what are you singing right now, Rich Uncle Mal?
Well, I'm singing something to the electorate, Robin, and I'm singing something to the economy as well. See if you can catch on. Why are you in so much hurry? Is it really worth the worry? Look around, then slow down. What's it like inside the bubble? Does your head ever give you trouble? It's no sin. Trade it in. All together now.
Hang on. Help is on its way. I'll be there as fast as I can.
Thank you, Rich Uncle Mal. We will let you get back to it.
Triple M rocks North Lakes. Good on you, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Mal.
Bye now.
Can we talk Bundy Rum? Actually, let's also start with the fact that there's some very funny headlines in the papers around the country today with Lisa Wilkinson, I break up with today. And then the other one about Bundy Rum, exclusive Bundy bosses say law's too much to bear.
Oh, nice work, Bundy.
That's cute. Come on. Okay, so basically they're saying the state liquor laws are unfairly discriminating against Queensland and make no sense, says the boss of Bundy Rum Distillery, because they're claiming that after midnight there's this big crackdown about pre-mixed drinks, but you can keep drinking beer and wine, and they have more alcohol in some instances
than the
premixes.
Seems fair.
So Bundy's getting upset and saying, hang on a sec, you're stopping us and all our glory that we've spent on putting premixes together and getting more people drinking Bundy.
That seems fair enough to me. But did lead us to a discussion off air, Marto, because I said to you, what's the difference between rum and bourbon and whiskey and... Can you drink all of those, or do you have to exclusively?
I don't know if there's anyone. I'm a rum drinker. Like, I'm exclusive. I can't drink
a bourbon. Drinker.
Yeah, if I get a bourbon, I'll knock it back. I'll say, sorry, I can't drink that.
I've never drunk a bourbon. I don't even know what it
tastes
like. It's
made
bourbon? Of corn. Bacardi's a rum. So they're all made from sugar and molasses. See, Bundaberg rum started as an accident from the Bundaberg sugar mill. They had all this molasses out the back. You know, they're pouring all this out when they processed the sugar. And they went. I've heard a story in the Caribbean, they make rum out of that stuff, and then that's how it all started happening.
Okay.
Just so they didn't have to cart this molasses away, they started making rum and thus Bundaberg rum. And
so what's bourbon?
Bourbon's made from corn.
Corn?
Yeah, I think so. People correct me if whenever you're ready, anyone. So let's go. Whiskey's made from barley and rye and wheat even sometimes. Bourbon's made from corn. Rum's made from sugar.
What's Gin's West Coast made. Cooler made from?
Oh, gee. I think that's Ben Cousins' socks after they get right. washed.
Jim Beam claims to be bourbon whiskey. So how do you explain that? I know, right?
Come on, wheat experts. And corn.
Can you drink right. all of them, yeah. or do you have to be straight down the line? Like, do you have to be a rum drinker? Do you have to? Is there anyone that can go, oh, no, I can have them all? Well, responsible service of alcohol, of course.
Oh, RSA, yes.
Why then are people punchy on Bundy? You know how they say that you can get angry on Bundy? Or is that not a thing? Is that just an urban myth?
I think that's a myth. I reckon you get punchy on bourbon too. I think it's the Coke rather than the... I reckon it's the Coke rather than the spirit.
Do you want to find out what the difference is between bourbon and rum?
Does anyone know what they're talking about?
Because clearly we don't.
And can you be all of these? Do you have to sort of stick to your lane? Is there one, if you drink one, is that the one that you drink for life? Or can you sort of move around? Because it seems to be very tribal.
What's Southern Comfort?
Southern Comfort, that's a good question. I don't know.
What is Southern Comfort?
Whiskey, I don't know. Bourbon. What are the differences? And do you have to be loyal to one?
And who drinks Woodstock? Who is that person?
Get a Woodstock in you.
My wife has sent me a thing. It's a mate of ours. It's a bourbon, and they've named their dog Woody after Woodstock because husband loves it.
Oh, beautiful.
How good's that?
Why not?
I finally found a Woodstock drinker. He's a mate of mine. I forgot.
Sue of Scarborough. Do you know anything about bourbon and Bundy?
Okay. Obviously, the spirits, and they have to be distilled. Rum is distilled from sugar, as you say, and bourbon's distilled from rye, and that's the American version of a whiskey. British whiskey, the Scotch whiskey, I can't remember what it's made of. I've forgotten. It's 20. I used to teach this.
Okay.
But the Irish whiskey is whiskey spelt with an E in it, and that's distilled three times, whereas Scottish whiskey is distilled only twice, and that's what makes it a wee bit more, a bit harsher on the palate.
Yeah.
And because the distillation, of three times of the distillation of the Irish whiskey makes it softer.
Yeah,
and they do it on peat as well.
On what, sorry? They do it on
peat. On a peat
oh,
fire.
On the peat bog sort of fire, the fire that sort
yeah,
of
yeah.
coal-like the, substance in mud. Okay, interesting, yep.
Yeah, and then the Scottish is only done twice.
Okay, so thank you, Sue.
Where did you teach that? You must have been a lecturer of alcohol at Irish University, was it? Or where did you teach that?
I used to teach wines and liquor studies in England, and I've got a Cert 3 in, a Wessex Cert 3 in wines and spirits.
All right. Good on you. Well, thank you for the call.
You're That's smart. What do you drink?
I drink wine. I prefer wine personally.
Liquid heroin.
Well, there you go. Okay, thank you. Very nice. That's a beautiful
Imagine
explanation.
Imagine if you had that as a job. You could claim everything you drank as part of your work.
Oh,
okay.
That is very true. Can you claim a kebab?
You know who is a dark horse? It's Robin Bailey, Ed. Now, I said it was quite clear that I enjoyed Mai Tais, and Kath and I brought a number of glass cups home that we bought from the merchandise. What?
Bought them from
the merchandise shed. Anyway, Robin said she did too. Now, I didn't even know you were liked to drink.
Yeah, well, I discovered
Impressive.
A good Mai Tai when I was
away.
A lot
of rum in those things. Hey, Tim, what do you drink?
I'm a whiskey drinker myself, pal.
Righto. Can you drink bourbon and rum? Do you know anyone who does that?
Mate, I can't. My missus will kill me. Rum, mate, something in rum makes me the angriest man in town.
This is what I was hoping we'd get to, that people have different reactions to different boozes, right?
Yeah, mate, I can drink bourbon till the cows come home, but with rum, one or two, I'll pick the biggest man in the bar and I'll have a go. But I'll normally end up running away from him because he's on the dick to me.
Okay, what happens? Okay, explain to me. Do you know you're doing it? Does something click in your brain?
Well, it's actually a part that's an ingredient in rum. It's known that in a male's brain, there's something that triggers it. And it's something that I actually read a few years ago in FHM, so it must be true, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's for the articles, do you?
It's actually, but for me, if I have one, two glasses of rum, it just... I don't know I'm doing it, so now I actually just ban myself and my missus bans me from it. But it just basically triggers something where it just sends me a bit doolally.
Okay,
right.
Fair enough. Does that happen to you, Marto?
No, I don't trust FHM. Zoo magazine, where I get most of my knowledge.
Mark of Rockley, tell us about the drinking.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm one of those special people that behave really well on rum. and it's the gluten and the caramel colouring, because the spirits are made from sugar. Sugar's a kicker. Some people kick it, kicks the gluten along, and it's a double party.
So you get punchy, Mark. Is that what you're saying?
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. And if I drink clear rum, it's fine. So.
Because of the colouring.
So, so should Bundaberg rum be clear? Do they put that colouring in?
I believe so. I don't think it's aged in with the barrels that we'd believe. It's made clear. Well, most spirits are made clear, and they colour them.
So you're saying we could make it any colour? So we could have sort of, we could have rainbow Bundy rum? If
well, that has its little catches too, because purples are pretty, blues are pretty dangerous colour. So you got that.
Windex.
That's always got me going. But you got black Sambuca is made out of blue, which is toxic, and they banned it in California. So that's always good.
Wow, there you go, Mark. Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No worries. Happy rum drinking, guys.
Maybe not now. It's 6:46. Maybe at 1.
It's 4 o'clock somewhere.
So, energy prices are going to be probably one of the major election issues coming into summer. They've already said, look, if you keep your, what we're going to get, some credits or some vouchers if we manage to keep the air conditioners off or at a certain level. Safe to say it's probably the biggest actual issue in the country at the moment, Marto. Yesterday or the day before, the government announced that they were re-looking at their clean energy targets. They're taking away some subsidies for some renewables for later on. They're also going to have a guarantee. They're going to guarantee the supply of energy in Western Australia. They're having those things where there's a battle. There's a battle on to get you as a customer of natural gas. It's too confusing. It is so confusing. Everyone's desperately worried that they're not going to have any power, enough power over summer, or it's going to cost too much because it's the most expensive thing in the world now, Marto. So what are we going to do?
Well, the ACCC, they're the ones who are supposed to protect us as consumers. They're going, there are no quick fixes. It took a while to get into this mess. It's going to take a long time to get out. Oh, thanks very much, ACCC, as always. What a toothless tiger they are. All right, so I was trying to get my head around this yesterday, and I stumble upon this article. And this is going to be controversial for everyone. And my only in the last year has my bill started to hit $1,000 a quarter. And I can't believe it, because we put one air conditioner in my son's room and it goes. He's now gone, and I'm going to watch this baby track down, I hope. But here's the information. Quite simply, they've done this whole complex series of calculations. We are now paying, as a percentage of our household budget, exactly the same as what we paid in 1984.
Okay, so the amount of money you're spending on bills versus how much you get as a percentage.
2.9% of your household budget in 1984 was spent on electricity and gas. In 2017, it is exactly 2.9%.
When do you start the butts? When can I start the butts?
Wait on. The size of bill. Yeah, of course the size of bills gone up, but so has your income, but not so much in the last few years for anyone.
No,
here's the big ones that have gone up. Communication, phones and internet were 1.8% of your budget in 1984. They're now 3.3%. In 1984, housing, that's rents, rates, mortgage, all that sort of thing, 12.8%. Now 19.6%.
Whoa.
That's what you're spending your money on.
Oh, okay,
education, here's one. In 1984, education, university was free. Only a quarter of people went to private school. And now a third go to school. So it used to be 0.9% of your household budget. It's now 3.1%.
Okay.
That's the one where everyone spent a lot more money. That and housing. Food gone down. Alcohol gone down. Tobacco
gone down.
Gone way down from 1984. We now spend way less these days on food, alcohol and tobacco. Food was 20% of your budget back then. It's now only 17%.
Because food's cheaper or because... What is that, Ed? Because people aren't eating less.
No, then there's... But there might be...
process. Well, this is percentage of your budget.
Cheaper,
that's all I want to say. The problem is, and the thing we say about electricity, it's like fuel in your car and it's like insurance. It's invisible, so therefore it's a grudge purchase. You hate buying something that you can't see or you can't put on, you can't put into yourself, and they're the facts. What are you going to do with your butts?
You ready? All right, here come my butts.
Yes. What are your butts?
My butts are as follows. The one about communication, that's like basically a cost of business. You have to have a phone. You have to have internet. You know, unless you've got the NBN, then you don't even need that. You just got to say, oh, I've got the NBN, and people go, oh, don't worry about it. We don't expect to get any emails from you. you know, so that became that's become a necessity rather than anything else.
Yeah, but again, but it's a raising cost, and it's not something
and
we can
mortgages. And this is the old argument, but mortgages as a percentage of your income have gone way up. I think in some parts of Australia, it's at what 300-400% of that's what I mean. That to me seems like the big one as the housing market's gone through the roof.
Yep, education. That's the one if you've got kids, you now realise, geez, it costs a lot more. But you're right. Yeah. It's rent rate. Rent rates and mortgages. It's killing people. Not electricity.
I'm loving this. What Mardonomics versus edgistics?
It's normally normally I wouldn't use a book. Normally I use a coaster from the pub.
And then at the end of it, he does his bets, and that's why I'm having a multi.
From Melbourne's mean streets.
You could say this was the murder we missed.
A story you'll have to hear to believe.
He said he was a 200-year-old vampire.
Why was Shane Chantra's abbot gunned down before giving evidence?
Two men shot him down. It's a mystery within a mystery within a mystery.
Listen now to this untold true crime story from Adam Shand. The Trials of the Vampire at podcast1.com.au or download the app.
Okay, let's talk about Lisa Wilkinson leaving the Today Show. So for those that haven't caught up with the news, apparently she was in contract negotiations and they'd been quite protracted for about 6 months. It got to 5 o'clock last night. A decision was made by her and her management, and basically the line is that she was not getting the same amount of money as Carl. He earns $2 million a year. She was on 1.8. She had asked to be taken to the same amount of cash.
Oh, he wasn't leading by much.
No, not by a huge amount.
But Ed made the point to me before, he does more work.
Well, okay.
He does three other shows. He does the This Time Next Year and 60 Minutes.
Crap.
And so maybe, it just struck me as that it's not exactly the same job, and it was partly the same. But it's like when people on Triple M do commentary and other things as well.
Okay. Well, okay. So this morning, everyone was watching the Today Show to see exactly how they were going to deal with it. And this was kind of a funny moment for those that weren't watching early, because they were going to address what had happened to Lisa, but then they were had their hand forced. Have a listen.
Very big day for us yesterday here on the show, and a very big day for Lisa Wilkinson. We'll have plenty more to say about that a little bit later in the program. But right now, as we always do, we'll get on with the news of the day. The Daily Telegraph leads with Lisa Wilkinson's departure from the Today Show, ending her decade-long stint here at Nine.
The same news leads Queensland's Courier Mail, with the paper reporting the TV star has now signed with the Ten Network.
And on ninenews.com.au this morning, I can never thank you enough. The outpouring of support for Lisa after she announced her departure.
Okay, so, you know, I'm a big supporter of Lisa's, and if that is the reason why she's made that decision, I say yay to her. I would suggest, though, that because, and certainly on Twitter, the announcement was made with a press release from Channel 9, and then fairly quickly afterwards she also came out with the press release from 10, so that would have been going on behind the scenes.
It's Weirdsville, though. What's the blondie that reads the news on the Today Show? She's married
Deb
to
Knight.
Peter...
Oh, no.
Sylvia Jeffries.
Oh, Sylvia Jeffries.
She's married to Carl's brother. So Carl will be sitting there with his sister-in-law.
Yes.
Every day.
Well, that's if she gets the job. At the moment, Deb Knight, who I do weekends with.
Oh, she's
the
dull.
Weekend
Channel 9, if you're listening.
Anyway,
she's
come
very
on, you
dull.
Two. I just want to get...
She makes a hangover worse.
Aren't we looking for someone to replace Lisa Wilkinson on the Today Show?
Mm-hmm.
So what we need is, here are the criteria that we know. You need to be someone who's already in the Channel 9 family.
It needs to
be someone who's across the news. It needs to be someone who's got a name, so someone that people will recognise and not someone that's coming out of nowhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But most of all, it needs to be someone, as Carl said in his farewell there, someone who's a great interviewer and who understands people and has a wonderful sense of humour. And I'm like, well, in my head, I've got a checklist which is going tick, 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 tick. Why wouldn't you get Freddie Fittler when he can interview a wall at State of Origin like this?
But I'll go to this wall.
Look at that. I mean,
it's obvious.
$2 million. Give him the money and he starts. You start tomorrow, Fred.
And he knows the Lebanese national anthem. How handy is that?
That's going to come in really handy.
And then Joey Johns would come in and they'd hang out and do a little...
So basically, let me just take from this entire conversation that when it comes to the removal of Lisa Wilkinson from the Today Show, neither of you two really care.
Hang on. So she's coming to Channel 10. I work for Channel 10. And if she's getting... If she didn't get $2 million at Nine and now she's coming to Channel 10 to get $2 million, well... the thing, the first thing you think of is we don't have it.
No.
I mean, that's, I mean, I would be.
What, didn't Channel 10 go broke recently?
Yeah, I would be attempting to cash that check, because if you look closely at the money that Channel 10 hand you, hey, the $10 note's got Waleed's face on it. But I don't think that's legal currency.
Okay, I want to paint a picture here, because we all went to Hawaii and Mato took his family, his two children, Hilly and Harry, and his wonderful wife, Kath. And as the days were progressing and we were getting closer and closer to returning to Brisbane, it became quite clear, particularly with Kath, that she was saying goodbye to her son and that Harry was going to start this amazing overseas adventure. Am I telling the story correctly so far?
Yeah, I was going to pull a photo out. That's why just the last morning, Kath spent a lot of time crying in the last three
I know,
days.
And it was really, and I totally understood that this was her baby. He was not going to come home. He was going on great adventures. And she was talking to me as we would catch up about things, you know, she'd been telling him about advice and that sort of stuff. Anyway, he'd been very quiet about all of this until we were all piling in at 5:30 a.m. to get on the bus and go to the airport.
Yeah.
And then I said to you, "So, Mato, what did you tell your son?" And you said you had one piece of advice.
Oh, the last piece of advice.
And one piece only.
Yeah, over life I've taught, you know,
of course.
Kath was jamming in late stuff, like, be careful with you, don't trust anyone, be careful with your passport, all this sort of stuff. Yeah, I had one piece of advice that I realised I'd never told him.
And I thought it was genius.
Oh, I wish someone had told me when I was his age.
Hang on. Before he tells it, Ed, can you think of all the things that you know, Mato? What would be that one piece of advice, do you think?
Don't drink out of a shoe unless it's your own.
That's a good one.
That is a good
that's
one. Crazy. He did get very sick that time.
I'll text it to him now.
What did he go with?
I said, ask girls lots of questions about themselves. They really enjoy that.
Beautiful.
Oh, Craig Martin.
Well, isn't that genius?
If someone told you that when you were 17, you would have gone a lot better than we all have, correct?
Yeah, yep. So true. Especially America, because he's an American. Especially Americans. The only topic they like is themselves. That is a beautiful
isn't
piece of advice.
Isn't that glorious? Mm. Even as a chick, I think that is really clever.
Yeah, he could trick plenty of girls with that one. Just ask them about themselves. They do love it. No one told me that till I was in my late 20s or so.
Because we'll think you're interested in us.
Oh, yeah.
And
we'll,
you know, if we think that there's one bloke that's actually asking questions about us, you know, you'll come back and want to meet that one bloke again. We'll tell our girlfriends that there's this one fella.
This guy's so interested
in
you.
He's Australian.
He doesn't talk about himself at all.
No.
No.
It's not about you.
Fascinating.
Look deep into their eyes.
Has it worked?
Hey?
He's been gone a couple of
days. It's early days. Actually, there's been a bit of trouble, but anyway.
So you want to talk about advice?
What, the advice you give your boys?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? And I always say to you, don't give it to them, don't jam it down their throat. You give them to them while you're driving because you're not looking at each other.
But just one piece, the most valid piece? Maybe it's the piece that your dad gave you.
Ooh, my dad's was, every time you leave, Dad was so interested in money, you know, money. It was all about money. Don't spend money, because they came from the tough days after the war. Yeah. Every time you leave your house, you spend money.
Yeah, that's true.
It's duh, but it's so true.
So
if you
don't
leave
your
house, you don't spend any money.
Alan of Redland Bay, what was it?
How are you? Okay, I always said to my two boys, be 100% sure you never put your signature or your old fella where it doesn't belong.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, Alan, that is so simple and so smart. And how do they parrot it back to you, Alan? And has it worked? Have they listened to your advice?
Neither of them are married and they're still single, so something's working.
Yeah. Wow, they're still single. So they're being very careful is what you're saying. There you go.
Yes, all right. I think so, yes. They're thinking about it, I'm sure.
Okay. How old are they? We should just check that they're not like 60.
No. Shivers, 37 and 35.
Oh, righto. Oh,
maybe scared them off it. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. Right. Thank you, Alan.
Okay. Yes, voters.
Dave of Red Hill, what was the advice?
I was going to school. He's an 05. And as I walked out the door, Dad hadn't had the birds and bees talk with me. Okay. And he just gave me a can of deodorant and a box of condoms. And he goes, here's a condom so you don't get pregnant. And here's a can of deodorant so you don't smell.
It's a simple life, Dave.
That's it.
Now don't put both of these on before you go out.
I love the deodorant one, though. I have to say, yeah. I find smelly blokes the biggest turn-off ever.
It's so hard. But, Robin, it's really hard as a teenage boy not to smell because your hormones and stuff are going crazy. You can't smell yourself.
Can you not smell yourself genuinely?
Not really. Because there's too much other stuff going on.
That's why. So if you put the deodorant on, there's a chance you'll have to put the condom on.
Oh.
That's nice.
Is that
the
theory, Dave?
Yeah. Okay. So,
thanks, Dave.
Next, please.
Maybe if I make them stink, that would be a better idea
of
contraception.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, I hadn't thought about that.
Jaden.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hello, mate, from Springfield Lake. What was the advice your dad gave you?
So, before I listened into the army, my mum was gone panicking, gave me through a checklist.
Yeah.
And my dad just turned to me and said, mate, one piece of advice, never trust a fart.
What does that mean?
Is that your own or someone else's?
No, that's he turned to me and said that. Just like in case one day you might follow through.
Right. What? Of all the things he could tell you, that was it.
That's fair, mate. That's fair. I think did that happen really? To Deke Stella in that marathon in '82? He sure did.
But in the army, you got your camo on. No one knows. Is that a stain, or is that supposed to?
And I love the fact that it's about his. It wasn't to someone else. Trust someone else's.
It's great life advice. Don't crap yourself. Marto
and Robin on Brisbane's Triple M.
Oh, if you're a normal listener to this show around this time, if you only listen for half an hour, you're going, what's this segment they've just pulled out of nowhere? Well, it's a bit of a look back at whether it's your old days at school, your old days at theme parks, your old days at Bullen's African Lion Safari is how it started. So away we go, because where it goes to is the Holden plant in South Australia is closing. Yeah. This week, the last 87 cars or 127 cars, however many they're making this week, are rolling off the plant line. I wanted to look back because my father, all through the 70s and early 80s, was a Kingswood driver. I rode off one of his brown one. They made a good brown one.
Did they ever?
He said didn't care because it was his work car. Every 2 years he got a new Kingswood. That was part of his job.
My
first and my third car were yellow Geminis. So we were a big Holden family. And I know that, this might might exclude a number of Ford people, but
Everyone's had a contact with a Holden, whether it was yours or your relatives. I mean, I had two. I had an FJ Holden was my second car.
You had an FJ Holden?
I did. I bought an authentic FJ Holden.
That's impressive.
And it got into an accident with I think it was a Mitsubishi. Anyway, it didn't even get a scratch and the Mitsubishi was written off.
Proud days. That was real steel. Have a listen to this woman on the news the other night.
Oh, it is absolutely mind-blowing. My dad owned an old FX Holden that I wrote off for him.
Yeah, well done, love.
You'd have to try very hard.
A lot of Holdens are in accidents.
I had a Holden Barina. I loved my Barina. My beep beep.
Yeah, you like the Barina?
Loved the Barina.
Oh, geez, I don't know.
Really?
Not a fan of the modern Barina, no. I love the Kingswood, love the Gemini. No, the Gemini was rubbish too.
No, the Gemini was fantastic.
No, when you had a look, it was the poor man's Tirana, and that was the reality. I wanted a Tirana, I got a Gemini.
But you could do up the Gemini. You could do up a Tirana, but you could do up a Gemini.
We already had two red pinstripes down the side. What would you want? Hold on, there's one other thing I need to pay you from the news the other night. This bloke, tell me what he's talking about.
I have a passenger side rear view mirror as well as a driver's side. These are very hard to get.
That's true.
Everyone got their own mirror.
No, they didn't come with passenger one. Or whichever it was, one side it didn't come with.
We had to go and get it. Driver got one.
Well, that's true. It was like we got sat nav now.
Can you tell me what's back there? You're clear. Oh, bang.
Oh, no, you won't.
Well, that's where we're going. You're holding memories. If something beautiful or wicked happened in the back of our front in a Holden, we want to hear about it.
Right on.
I still own a Rodeo to this day. A Holden Rodeo has done about 400,000.
Do you know where it is?
No, let's not talk about that. It's in the back of someone's yard.
Lee of Jimboomba. Got Holden memories?
My mum used to pick us up in a E.H. Holden when back in early primary school, early 80s.
Is that three on the tree?
Yeah, it was actually. And jam too many kids in the back seat, as was the go in those days, and we'd play corners on the way home.
And, everyone squishing into one kid.
Yeah, I think we had about five or six kids in the back seat on any given day. And I was on the left-hand side this particular day. We went around the corner, the big push come, and the door popped open.
Someone fall out? Anyone fall out?
Oh, half fell out. I was grabbing onto anything and everything I could to get back in. Yeah. And even though I spent the whole day at school, the biggest lesson I learned that day was to sit in the bloody middle.
Get in early. Yeah. Sit.
Yeah. Fair enough,
that's
Lee.
Fun.
That's great.
Yeah, Holden's were good. You just lost a couple each time you went to them.
Mick of Brackenridge. Got a Holden memory.
Was. Yeah, what Holden was it, Mick?
First car was HZ Kingswood wagon, little 253 V8 with mags and all the gear.
Oh God!
And remember you used to park in the gravel car park on the corner of Edward Street there when you come out of the pub. You used to be able to park for $5 all night.
Hold on. Corner of Edward and White.
Where?
Oh, Edward and Charlotte, I think, or Mary. There's the two pubs on the corner on Edward Street. Okay. And I come around the corner into Albert Street going home, and I floored it, and being a smart ass, and I smashed into the concrete wall where the ramp goes down into Albert Street.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, and we're there now.
Yeah, so I managed to drive it home.
Yeah, of course.
And I thought, what am I going to do to fix it? So a friend of mine knew there was a few cars lying around in the bush that were just sort of abandoned old wrecks.
Stolen.
We found the Kingswood wagon in the bush, and we went and got a whole front end for nothing.
Rebuild it.
Right.
That's took it home, socket set, few screwdrivers.
Yeah.
Put it back together ourselves.
Great story.
Well done. Did it drive after that?
Oh, yeah, it was Kingswood.
What about the colour? How'd you match the colour, Mick?
Oh, I'd be a bit like Robin's Marina and just have a different colour on every panel.
Ipswich
racing colours,
yeah,
they used to call that.
Ipswich racing colours, yeah.
Mick knew my Marina, there you go.
That's awesome.
Rod,
that's awesome.
Of Everton Park, got any Holden memories?
Mate, we bought my dad and I bought this old HZ Kingswood from a car yard. Didn't go that well. We rebuilt the engine out, and then decided, well, let's, you know, put the fruit to our labour. To the test, and we drove it around Bathurst after Bathurst was all over and done with, and it was just a normal road track like it normally is, and just took it around there, and she handled quite well. And then we sold it when we got back. It was a great.
That's a great win.
Run. What a trip.
That's a win. Can you still do that, Rod, after the race? Because you know in the Tour de France, you can go and ride the stages after the race. The races have gone past it the next day or the day after. Can you still do that at Bathurst?
I think you can, yeah. This is about 15, 20 years ago now.
Old
HZ Kingswood.
Did it bring you and your dad really close together?
Oh, shit, yeah. Definitely, mate, yeah.
I don't swear, but that's good.
And you could say in the advertising that it had been on Mount Panorama.
Yeah, it's driven Bathurst.
As seen at Bathurst.
Hi, I'm Mark Boris. Every single day in Australia, people are busting their guts in starting and running their own businesses. It's a big deal. 60% of Australians are hired by small to medium-sized business owners. These guys are doing their bit, buying stock, hiring people, and paying their taxes. So what is it like to start your own business? How do you go from just running a business on the side after work to owning something much bigger? How do you make it your future? Join me on The Mentor, a weekly show on Podcast One where I speak to Aussie business owners who are working through just that. I find out what makes them tick. I help them work out their next steps for their growth and for their future.
The Mentor with Mark Burris. Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
Brisbane's Triple M at 7:43. Big congrats to Michael from Joiner. He's heading along to our Triple M Garage session featuring live. Another chance to get along tomorrow. Top of 23 today in Brisbane. Rain about as well.
Okay, Marto, so a couple of weeks ago you were talking about your son Harry and he had his 18th birthday and how because he was 18 you were providing the booze. And as these fellas came and were starting to drink, they started to get a bit sort of punchy.
Well, there was a couple of them did. And the safest thing is to give people gloves if you want to fight. That decides whether they're fair dinkum. It makes them think, gives them a realisation, oh, was I being a bit of a dick? and we gave them gloves, and they did have a bit of a bleed. No one got hurt. And then in the end, there were five other fights for the night because everyone said, I wouldn't mind to go too. Because all these young blokes are fit and they do some of this. They like to do some of this.
So I've retained that information because we're now in off-season for football, and even though the football season tends to seem to go all year.
It does, doesn't it?
The boys are a bit bored and they're kind of, my kids are very physical. They're used to doing a lot of football. And so I kind of in the back of my head thought, I wonder if I should get all three of them and me, the four of us together, and maybe do a boxing session.
Good idea.
I found my friend Melissa O, who is a personal trainer, and she specialises in boxing. And I said to her, mate, if I brought the kids along, do you reckon you could do a session with them? Well, we did it yesterday. They loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's my good. Lord. But
it's tough stuff.
Yeah, and like so full of cardio, and she was really precise about how to punch, and, you know, they were both on the gloves and then on the receiving end, and they were learning and they had to take time. And anyway, brilliant session. They were exhausted after it. I thought, yes, we need to do that again. Except around the kitchen table, when I was trying to get them to clear the table and stack the dishwasher and do their jobs, they were showing each other without the gloves how to crack each other in the head.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking maybe that wasn't such a good idea. Because now, really, all I've done is given them the scope to hurt each other when they punch.
That's good.
Is it?
Well, yeah, keep the fists up.
Yeah.
Defence-wise, you've got to get your defence sorted out.
Well,
that's what boys do each other. You got three boys. What else were you expecting?
I thought that they would, I don't know. Yeah, maybe naivety, stupidity.
I know another family with three boys. Mm-hmm. Two of them end up going into the army down to Duntroon and stuff. They are three of the best fighters God ever put breath into. When they used to go out, if they couldn't find anyone to fight, they'd fight themselves.
But that's not a good idea. Like I've
not these days. But
as a mother, you know, because we go to the nth degree and we always think of the worst case scenario because that's what we do. So as I'm lying in bed last night not being able to sleep, I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, they're going to hit 18. They're going to go to a pub. They're going to be able to, you know, because they've actually learnt how to do it.
They won't be aggressive. They'll just be defensive if anything happens.
Really?
Get the gloves up.
Because I'm thinking that unless I can just strap gloves to them or have that idea. You
that's
know how
not bad. fingerless ones. Just you always keep a pair of mitts on them.
So well, what about Karate Marty? Because your father-in-law, he uses self-defense. He teaches self-defense.
Yeah.
Is there a policy about when to do it and when not to do
it?
No,
their thing is always know how so you don't have to and avoid situations. That's always the thing with martial arts. Try not to use it. That's always their thing. And that's the way they kind of, that's why they kind of go with it because it teaches you how to control yourself. And like Marto said, you'd be aware of situations and try and get out of them before anything happens. But boxing is the best. I do my boxing training with Chopper here on the deck down at
the river.
And it is the best exercise you'll ever do. Any athletes that do something and then cross over to boxing, they always say boxing is the best exercise. Gets out all the aggression, makes you think. And it just and it tires you out. It's
why don't you get one kid a day to wear a sumo suit and anyone can punch him, you just punch him as much as you like for an hour and a half, just for 2 hours in the sumo.
There's the answer. Yeah. Why didn't I think of
that? Sorted. Put our next guest's life into the category of absolutely amazing. His name is Rob Langdon. He's got a new book out called The Seventh Circle. Now, he was in the Australian Army for just the 19 years. And then he became a security contractor working in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Great.
And in June 2009, the Taliban attacked a convoy that Rob was protecting. And that's when things really started to go haywire. And he joins us now. G'day, Rob.
How you going?
So what happened, Rob? What happened on that fateful day?
So what used to happen with some of the Afghans working for security companies, because they were overseen by warlords who were basically out to get as much money as they could, you'd get attacked by your own security people. They'd say to all the poor Westerners, go back to Kabul where it's safe and we'll look after the convoy. And because the convoys were under military protection, then they'd load all sorts of stuff, weapons, drugs, whatever, and take it to wherever they needed to get it to.
Oh, my God. Cool. So you were attacked by the people that were meant to be there working with you in security?
Yeah. Well, I was sort of like the guy who sorted out all the problems in the company at the time, but I'd left the company the day previous, and two of the guys who were on that convoy that I'd trained up gave me a call and told me where they'd been attacked. At the time, there were no attacks that close to Kabul, and just the whole thing was a bit sus.
What did you do?
Well, I headed out there. It was late at night, when I got out to where they were, this guy wasn't letting the convoy push on, waving his gun around at people. I told him 3 times, put it down. If you don't want to come with us, drop your weapons, hand over your ID card, and go back to Kabul. But he was stupid enough to put the gun in my face.
So the obviously you guys have been, you know, you've shot him, and then so he was threatening your life. And then what happens to you?
When we went through his car, there we found a heap of drugs in this. By the time it was daylight, I basically got told by the company to destroy the car and the drugs. But somewhere along the line, it was lost in translation. The body got destroyed as well, which didn't look good for me.
Oh,
God. Yeah. Long story short, I basically got handed over to the police by the company because they just washed their hands of me and did a 5-minute court case and ended up with a death sentence.
But you're clearly speaking to us. So what happened in that interim?
There was a certain amount of pressure applied on the company to pay the Ibra, which is essentially blood money. And it's actually a part of Sharia law, Islamic law. So eventually they paid that, and that was why they give you the death sentence.
And how long did you end up actually staying in jail for?
7 years all up. By that time, I was lucky enough to get, with the support of my family and an Australian lawyer, Steve Kenny. Mm-hmm. And then another American lawyer, Kim Motley, came on board, and she's got a hell of an amount of experience in Afghanistan. She went over there to help them set up their legal system, and then went over, became a freelance lawyer over there, and she's pretty much the only Western lawyer in the country. And has a pretty good idea what's going on, and everyone goes to her. She basically took my case on. We've become really good friends as a result of this. And and she said, look, I'm going to get you out. I can't tell you when it's going to be, but I will get you out. And she was the only person who actually said that to me, and she stuck with it.
Hey, Rob, tell us what a day is like in an Afghan prison.
It depends who you are. I basically got myself into a routine, essentially the way we used to when you first join the army, because it gives you something to do. It breaks up the day. Mm. So, get up, make yourself clean the room, make your bed, make yourself tidy everything up. And I used to clean a section of the hallway just outside my door just to annoy them. And I'd do that every day.
It's a quite incredible story. It's a quite incredible place. Rob Langdon, the book is called The Seventh Circle, 7 years in jail after a death sentence in Afghanistan. It is quite incredible. There's been a lot of buzz about this on Facebook and online, a lot of people sharing that this is a great book. So if you get a chance, run out, grab yourself a copy. It sounds like an incredible story. Good on you, Rob.
Thanks very much.